we call them productions. And so it was like we started in his backyard at Silver Terrace Park, and I remember one of the first pieces I did, it was just right there near his house, and then we did another one, and then after that, maybe with me being naive, he was like, and I wasn't scared of doing anything, so he was like, let's go. And then we went and hit all the Hall of Fames and really let people know who MPC was.
That was Nathan Tan of Nate One Designs and New School Clothing and Accessories. I'm Jeff, and this is Storied San Francisco, a podcast all about the artists, activists, and small businesses that make our city unique. In this episode, part one of two, meet Nathan and hear about his evolution from a young kid born in England to a graffiti writer in San Francisco. He'll take us up through his high school and early college years, when he went to SF State originally as a business major. Then a counselor told him he was an artist. Here's Nathan.
Wow, we're going to go back deep, huh?
Let's go.
But I really appreciate it because, you know, I love my family and my culture.
Right on.
And that's a big part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So my parents are both from a small country in Southeast Asia called Myanmar.
Yeah.
It's also referred to as Burma. Mm-hmm. They were born there, they grew up there, and in the 60s, because of the political climate, which is just a nice way of saying how messed up the country was, they left. And
they already knew each other? There?
They were married pretty young, mm-hmm. and they had my sister,
mm-hmm.
Sharon. So
that's an older sister.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And because at that time Myanmar was British ruled, so they were able to go to either Hong Kong or England.
Mm-hmm.
And for a few reasons, they chose England.
Okay.
You know, my mom's mom was there too.
Oh.
Already.
And having a kid in tow and grandma around.
So.
Might have been part of the equation.
Yeah. I mean. Yeah, so they moved there, I believe, in 68.
Mm-hmm.
And then about halfway during their stay, I was born.
Okay.
In 71.
Okay.
And then in 74, I believe, in 75, we came to America.
You were like 3 or 4.
I was about 4.
Do you remember it?
So that's so funny. You know, I don't remember too much about England, but the jarring moving over to a new country, like that's almost where my memories begin.
Okay.
You know, like I clearly remember the ride from the airport to my grandma's house in San Francisco.
Oh, okay. So you had another grandma already here.
My dad's family was here.
I was going to ask, you know, why specifically
San Francisco.
They came to San Francisco. Do you know why your dad's mom came here?
My dad's mom and dad came to San Francisco in the 60s. They also brought along some of their children who went to college in America.
Okay.
And then my dad being the oldest, he came on his own.
Got it.
And so, yeah, I completely remember that. That coming here and driving down Fulton Street, you know.
So it was the city in SF.
Oh, yeah, right. Right by Spreckles Lake.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so...
That's really Parkside.
Yeah, right there. So that's very much a part of my childhood memories there.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I came here, a little kid from England. I had an accent that I probably lost pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And I started going to preschool out here, and then eventually my parents amazingly bought their own home in Daly City in Westlake.
Okay.
Amazing, right?
Yeah, that was possible back then, kids.
Just coming here with nothing, and my dad started his own business. My mom started working for the bank. So just, you know, very middle class and working very hard, you know, but just such an amazing different life than if they would have stayed in Burma.
Right. Or possibly even stayed in England, right?
Yeah, it's too cold.
I mean, San Francisco is not... Like, we have fog in common, that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were about 4, your sister's like 3 or 4 years older than you.
Yeah, my sister, 6 years older.
Than 6, me. Okay. Oh, well, my math is, I need more caffeine to get my math. But is it just the two of you sibling-wise?
Yeah.
Okay, so you grew up, like, your sister was pretty much always around.
Yeah.
And did you, so you grew up, or at least you started your time in the United States in Daly City?
In San Francisco, actually.
Oh, y'all were in Daly. Yeah. Okay, so eventually they bought the house.
So, yeah, we lived in a little apartment right near Washington High School, and they were able to save up money, buy that house, $98,000. Can you imagine?
Like, I have that much credit card debt.
You know? Seriously. So they were able to buy a little house and just, you know, slowly take care of it and add to it. And that's where I grew up. So very Mr. Rogers neighborhood.
Was it the ticky-tacky part?
It's all those houses were Dolger, built by the Dolger family, I guess. Yeah. And they were all very similar, 50s looking.
Yeah.
I actually did a t-shirt with one of the houses on it because it's so, like, classic.
They're iconic.
Super iconic.
I mean, people love to deride, but I'm like, but yeah. You also know what they are.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's where I grew up.
Okay. Did you go to school down there?
Yeah.
In Daly City?
Yeah. I actually went to, I went to a school for a minute in, I think, a year or two in the Richmond.
Okay.
George Peabody Elementary. Dang. Only you locals know about that shit.
Yeah. So. Right. Because usually it's, if you're from here, it's like the high school. But now we're going elementary and there's always more of those. It gets more granular.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually drove by it the other day. I was like, God, so back in my memory.
Right.
But then we moved to Daly City in Westlake, and I went to Westlake Elementary from 2nd to 6th.
Okay.
And then after that, they made the decision, or we all kind of figured out, what do I want to do? I could have gone to the public school, or I could have gone to this little Catholic school on Brotherhood Way where some of my friends went. So I'm sure that was expensive for my parents.
Yeah.
Thank you, parents. And they sent me there. And
okay.
That was 2 years of that.
So, like, junior high,
seventh
and eighth grade. Okay.
So that was a big culture shock because, you know, we didn't really have a formal religion in my household, and this was, like, straight-up Catholic school.
Right.
Everyone there was Catholic.
Uniforms, all that stuff.
You know, corduroys, white shirt.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah, man. No tennis shoes.
Did you have to do church things as part of?
Okay. Dude, I was an altar boy.
Woo. Oh, wow. Yeah. See, I grew up Catholic. I'm not Catholic now, but I grew up Catholic, and I never had to do that.
Yeah. That's just so 80s in San Francisco, dude. Altar boy stories. But yeah, so.
You survived altar
boy. Oh, yeah. Okay. No, I'm good. But yeah, I totally went through communion, catechism, all that from, I think I did it in 8th grade.
Did your sister go to Catholic school as well?
No, not at all.
So this was something that changed with you. Did your parents, like, adopt Catholicism?
Or no.
Was it just you? No. They just sent you on this journey?
Yeah, and they thought, you know, well, in Burma, they actually went to Christian schools.
Okay.
So they knew English very well, and I don't know how much they knew about Catholicism, but hey, some of my American friends were going there, and it was probably better than the public school, you know.
I was just about to ask about friends you might have made at the school.
Mm-hmm.
Did that happen?
7th and 8th grade, you know, I'm in Facebook touch with a few folks.
From that era.
From that era.
Yeah. But at the time, was like, were you finding homies or?
Me, myself?
Yeah, at this school.
Yeah, like I was the new kid. And my personality is very, like, non-confrontational, get along with everyone.
Yeah.
You know, that's just how I am. And, I made friends pretty quick.
Nice. What other kinds of things? So, like, 8th grade is about 13, 14?
So, this is, like, 83, 84.
Mm-hmm.
83 and 84. I think I started high school in 84.
Mm-hmm.
Shit, maybe it was 82, 83, 84 when I was in 7th and 8th grade.
Okay.
So just speaking on a hip-hop perspective, because hip-hop is such a big part of my life.
Yep.
This was like the very beginnings of me starting to understand like hip-hop culture, how it was here in the Bay Area, how it was spreading here. Like, you know, we have our own hip-hop things going on here in the Bay too, but the East Coast hip hop was starting to come out here in the early 80s.
Right.
So at this school, there was like some kids that were graffiti writers and DJs.
At this Catholic school.
Yeah. Oh, and B-boys.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was my very beginning into exploring that and listening to the music and doing my week breakdancing moves.
Oh, shit. You know, my camera shoots video, too.
No, we don't, we don't need to do that.
I mean, if you did, I'd be very impressed. You're a couple years older than me, and I can barely walk these days.
Right. Yeah. Breaking and aching.
So you're like dipping into hip hop culture in the early to mid 80s. Did that come
more as a fan too? More like of a, okay. I keep it real with my real entry into the hip hop community out here, you know?
Yeah.
So then I was more of a fan of it and learning about it. And it wasn't until freshman year when I miraculously got into St. Ignatius, which is a pretty good college prep high school. At that time, I was very much like small fish going to a big pond and not ready academically.
Oh.
But things in life happen for a reason.
Yeah.
And first period, freshman year, I met my best friend.
Okay.
Who was already like a San Francisco graffiti hip hop legend in the making.
That's what I wanted to know. Which happened first, your sort of immersion into hip hop culture or your own art?
Interesting. Yeah, I was always...
Like, which informed the other?
I was always an artist.
Okay.
I was always...
Do we need to rewind a little bit for that? Or okay.
I mean, because I would say where my art really matured was when I was a teenager, when I started doing graffiti.
Right.
That's... But as a young kid, yeah, I was always into drawing, and I would always draw, like, pictures of, like, Michael Jackson and Snoopy. Copy cartoons. So I was working on my drawing skills as a kid. I didn't really claim that as my identity.
Yeah.
Not at all yet. You know, yeah. I was more, like, into baseball and the Giants and collecting cards. I was just, you know...
So all those things is pretty normal. Like, all those things are just kind of, like, your world.
Yeah.
And eventually, maybe, or maybe, you know, breakfast tacos, like something else kind of comes to the surface. But
yeah,
was meeting this friend in your freshman year who was already a graffiti writer?
Yeah.
That was probably pretty big.
So his name is Usanol Smith. What's up, E? He started like, okay, so on the East Coast, you have b-boying, also known as breakdancing, right? Mm-hmm. But on the West Coast... starting in the 60s, we've had our own dance form, street dance, called strutting and boogalooing, roboting and strutting, right? BRS. Yeah.
Oh.
So that's our indigenous dance form. But
starting in the 60s?
Yeah.
Damn.
So the Black Resurgence, the Black Messengers, like these are first generation strutting groups. And one of them, I believe the Black Resurgence, correct me if I'm wrong out there, but they were the dancers for the Black Panthers.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So they were dancing off of live drumming.
I was going to ask what the soundtrack was.
So can you imagine? So that's where strutting really originates from that movement. And then it became more of like an entertaining sort of a thing where people are dancing at Fisherman's Wharf, Pier 39. And they're dancing for money, and there's these amazing talent shows in the late 70s and these showcases.
Mm.
And this is really things that predate me even, but I've learned about it and studied it from people that were there or that were participating. So I feel I could speak on it a little bit.
Sure.
But my friend Usanoff is really the master of the Bay Area hip-hop history. You know? Like, man. You should interview Usanol.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing. But so I was lucky. I got to meet someone that was a very old soul and someone that was very experienced already. So can you imagine? He's already doing graffiti in like 84, I think.
As a kid. Yeah, but then when you're 12. When you're 13 and 14, you're like, I'm not a kid.
Yeah, right.
Anymore.
Yeah, no, he was a very... I'm like,
shut up, kid.
He was very much a grown little man.
Yeah.
As you know, because he had a crew already.
I was gonna say experience-wise, I mean,
he was there during the first days where hip hop graffiti writing was new.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? So it's like we had cholo writing, and then there was the transition into hip-hop writing.
Mm.
Right? So this is...
For those not in the know, can you speak to what those... What maybe the, some of the differences or like that evolution
means? Wow, that's such a deep thing, and I don't want to disrespect the cultures and the art form. But
we don't have to.
For the shortcut version of it, I would say cholo writing is more gang affiliated, territory affiliated. Mm-hmm. It's more from the Latino culture, mm-hmm. and that has been around possibly from the 50s,
right.
easily 60s. And San Francisco has its own history with that.
Right.
Right. Also known as placas.
Okay.
So there's that. But with graffiti writing, with hip hop, with writing that came from the East Coast, writing that came from the train movement, that kind of graffiti, that's what started in the Bay Area more in the early 80s, mm-hmm. in my historical opinion, right? So mm-hmm. more early 80s, mid 80s is when it really became a thing here.
And that's kind of right when you
and I was lucky enough to be a kid and to jump in either at the tail end of the very first generation. That's what I guess I would say where I'm at. I started in 1987 actually painting, mm-hmm. starting to build a name. I was out there by 87.
Okay.
Yeah, I could
when
say...
When you're like 15, 16?
So I'm 16 years 16, old okay. in high school. And Yusnov is a little younger than me, so he was 16 as well.
Okay.
But he had been writing since he's 12. So he was like a four-year vet by the time we... He was a four-year vet by the time we started MPC. And we got our crew, Masterpiece Creators...
Yes.
...from... Our friend Rodney Orko Wade, who just passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And Jeff, it's crazy. We just painted a piece for him on 14th and Mission on Monday and Tuesday. So I'm so proud that we did that for him. And it's up right now, you know?
Okay.
And this is like
a memorial kind of thing?
Yeah. We painted his three. He went by a few names. We painted those. We sampled some of his imagery from a piece he did at Silver Terrace Park in 1987 or 1992. And we put that on the wall. So for people that know what we did, that's like if Marvin Gaye died and you sampled What's Going On and made a tribute song. You know what I'm saying? That's what we did visually. So
wow.
Yeah. So that's crazy. You know, that's the beginning of me writing graffiti, meeting Orko, him giving Ustinov MPC, and then Ustinov had a crew, Wall Wreckers, already for over 4 years. So he disbanded that because it got so big. You know, he disbanded that, kept himself and maybe two other writers, J Ray, Little D, and then he adopted me into the crew because I just showed genuine interest.
Mm-hmm.
And our philosophy, his philosophy back then was like, don't just go cherry pick all like these already known great guys. Mm. He was more like, go form the best team you can and be the underdogs and kick ass that way. So that's
punch kinda, up.
Yeah.
And what was your name?
My alias. So this is how naive and stupid I am. So you pick a name, dude, right? That means something else. It's your nom de plume.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
your alias. Mm-hmm. It's something, you know, like Yusnov used to be Chaotic. And then when he started MPC with me, he changed to Omen 2.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He got that name from Orko. And then I, being Nathan... Nice Nathan all my life. I'm like, I'll be Nate 1 and no one will know. You know? So stupid. But Nate was like my new grown-up name, you know, entering high school.
Yeah.
Like, I know when I have old friends talking to me because they call me Nathan.
Oh, that's pre.
That's pre Nate 1. You know what I mean? That's pre-high school.
Right.
So I'm...
Do you answer to both now?
It's so crazy when people call me Nate 1. It's just, it makes me laugh.
You know? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
at the time, it would have been the opposite, right? You're like, don't call me Nathan.
Yeah, I guess.
Or certain people. Actually, my mom calls me Nate. Nathan.
You know, actually, you don't want your graffiti name to be really even said. You know, you're trying to be underground.
And you want it to be seen.
You want it to be seen, but you don't want really people to know who you are if you're doing work out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you, I'm sure there's like, well, not statute of limitations. I'm not going to get into any of that, but like, can you talk about some of the spots around town that y'all were hitting up?
Yeah. We did a lot of work at what are called Hall of Fames.
So Hall of Fames.
Right. So Hall of Fames are places that are adopted, that are spaces where people are painting. It could be legal. It could be illegal. It could be just easy to get away with because of the location. Yeah. And we were lucky. We had, by 85, we had a few Hall of Fame spots. So when we started in 87, it was kind of like, it was my partner, Omen 2, Yusinov's, his name was Omen 2. So it was kind of his, I don't know how well he planned this or how much he thought this out, but we went on tour and just went and hit all the Hall of Fames with huge pieces. Like, damn. We call them productions. And so it was like we started in his backyard at Silver Terrace Park. And I remember one of the first pieces I did, it was just right there near his house. And then we did another one. And then after that, maybe with me being naive, he was like, and I wasn't scared of doing anything. So he was like, let's go. And then we went and hit all the Hall of Fames and really let people know who MPC was.
Like in one night or a couple
nights? No, this is like through the year. Maybe the summer was when we really started banging out pieces. And then people started going, who are these MPC guys? They have so many names on the wall. Like sometimes we would paint 3-4 more names. Like our friends, maybe some of the guys that were in WR, we would paint their names on these new pieces. So they didn't know how many of us it was. But it was basically mainly just me and E.
So you'd go out to these Hall of Fames, Halls of Fame, whatever, and each do your own piece, right? It wasn't like, but then some of the tags made it the crew.
So just in a nutshell, when you're a writer, a graffiti writer, your objective is to get your name out there, right? So that's where you start with a tag. With the next level would be, it's called a throw up. It's where it's more like a bubble letter. There you go.
Yeah.
Right. And then it gets more and more complicated and then gets into the more of the world of art because there's colors that need to be thought out. There's styles. Mm-hmm. There's so many different kinds of styles of letters and ways. And nowadays the game is just so crazy. Like people are rappelling, bro. They're rappelling down buildings. I mean,
thank you. That's what I mean. I'm like, that's the only thing that makes sense with some of the stuff I see.
To me,
I live over by that public storage building at Geary Masonic. Yeah. I'm like, damn.
Yeah. To me, that's like it's not brand new, but it's like the new thing in the game where it clearly makes it not a young man. It's not an old man sport no more. You will not catch me rappelling down shit.
Yeah. Different sport, literally.
Yeah.
And then art and doing that while you're dangling.
Yeah. You know,
I have respect. But I'm going to be real. I have respect for it. I'm like, whether I even like the art or not, I'm like, the fact that someone dedicated themselves enough.
Oh, yeah. Just on that whole note, you know, being someone very proud of my graffiti roots, my hip hop roots, you know, I've had to defend or explain graffiti art as I become an adult to other adults. And just really, I don't know. I used to teach a class at 1 a.m. Gallery downtown, and I taught the history of graffiti art, and I taught that class to many corporate tech companies. And I was just in a space where I had the opportunity to teach these guys, you know. I guess it could have been like, hey, you're sharing too many secrets, you know, but then on the other hand, you know, you are educating people on the subject, you know. So anyway, I just don't know how your audience is going to feel about all this graffiti talk. We're going deep into my graffiti roots. But
oh, my audience.
Yeah.
Oh, no, because it's SF graffiti.
Well, this is history. Part of San Francisco history.
Totally.
For sure.
That's why we're here, man. Yeah. Okay, well, so that's a pretty good version of how you got started and what y'all were doing in the beginning.
Correct. So that whole journey.
What's the next big evolution in your life?
So by the end of high school, I guess you could actually say right at the end of high school, we capped off that part of that first few years of our graffiti career with being on Channel 2 News.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, we did a commission piece. And it said it was in Sunnydale, in the Sunnydale district of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of violence going on in 89. Mm-hmm. People were dying. Young lives were dying. And we got commissioned to do a piece that said Sunnydale. And there was someone that just died. And so we put his name in the piece and said, rest in peace. And we just did it the way we would normally paint it. One of our productions, you know, we used these Fat Albert characters. It was dope. We painted Malcolm X, and then we quoted this song by Boogie Down Productions that said, stop the violence and kick the science. So that was the top message. And then we, so we
painted. And this was in the Sunnydale.
This was Sunnydale on the side of a liquor store. It was huge. It was probably like 100 feet long by 10, 12 feet up. And the news came down on the first day, and they made it seem like the neighborhood didn't like it, and they happened to film like 10 seconds of a guy kind of mouthing off at the camera, and they framed it so badly.
They had their narrative.
How they wanted to portray this mural, and then the only props I'll give Channel 2 is that they came back and filmed the final version of the piece.
Yeah.
And made it a positive story, I guess, you know, at the end. They showed, at least they showed our work again.
They came back a little bit. They came back
3 days later.
Did y'all want to talk to them?
We weren't there on the time they came back. We were there when we were just starting the piece.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. Hmm. You know, it helped shape my perspective of the media at a pretty young age. Yep. You know, I had just graduated from high school, so... Mm-hmm. My parents were so shocked to see us on the news. They came running downstairs, and me and E were like recording it on a VCR machine.
Yep.
And taping us.
And you had to be there when it was on.
Yeah, it was on the.
You had to be there at the time.
We were waiting.
That's another thing kids don't understand.
It was 10 p.m. Like, it was a 10 o'clock
night. Right. And you had to be ready to press that record button.
Probably recorded.
With a blank tape in there.
Yeah, probably recorded over
And the
something.
Tapes were as big as cars.
Yes, dude.
You brought up your parents. Mm-hmm. What did they think of this evolution that basically happened in high school?
Yeah.
Were they into it?
They were not.
Yeah.
My dad had a business on 21st and Mission. He was a dental technician.
Oh.
So he
That's
owned,
right where I used to live.
Yeah. So he owned his own business right there above that liquor store with the Juana Alicia mural.
Yeah.
And... he saw graffiti probably the very beginning of the tagging era. Mm-hmm. So he didn't really know how to associate what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I was trying to paint these murals, basically.
Yeah.
You know? So when we did the first one, I let them know, and they were not happy. And so they go, well, okay, you could do it. But that's the last time. So I said, okay, wink, wink.
Yeah.
And then from that point on, I just never really told them about what I was doing.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't need to know.
I guess not. You know, I have my own kids. One's, you know, 20, one's 18 almost. So
okay.
Thinking back, it's just such a trip to see what I was up to when I was 16.
Yeah. I mean, the kind of, not everyone's like this, but the kind of young person I was, I'm like, even looking back, I'm like, my parents didn't need to know a lot of the stuff I did. Yeah. And I think I turned out okay.
Yes.
Okay, at least.
Yeah, you seem like you did, John.
And I have a great relationship with my parents now.
Yeah. Me too.
There you go. Boom. We all survived and we love each other.
It's the latchkey kid era.
Yep.
Right.
Oh, yeah. So you graduated from high school.
So that's kind of the end of that little period. And then you go on to our college years.
Did you ever think about leaving
what,
the Bay Area to go to college?
No,
never even,
not a thought. I was very much like happy where I'm at. Didn't think about I applied to a few colleges, and my GPA did not make it so I could get into any UCs, but I got into state, and I just thought, you know, I'll be a business major because state was pretty good at business.
Okay.
But it was like during my second, almost third year, where I had a counselor meeting, showed him my portfolio, and he was totally like, what are you doing, dude? You're not a business major, you're an artist.
That was Nathan Tan. Check back next week for part 2. That drops next Tuesday, wherever you get podcasts. And don't forget to check out this year's San Francisco International Film Festival, which runs April 24th through the 28th. Go to sffilm.org for more info. Music for Storied San Francisco was produced, performed, and curated by Otis McDonald. Aaron Lim of Bitch Talk Podcast is our contributing producer. And the show is produced and hosted by me, Jeff Hunt. Now in our sixth season, we have more than 200 episodes available on our website, storiedsf.com, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're able to, please rate and review the show, and drop us a line at storiedsf@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Keep rejecting those silly doom loop narratives about our city. Stay wacky, weird, healthy, and creative. And we'll see you next time on Storied San Francisco. We acknowledge and respect the first humans of the unceded land we call San Francisco, the Ramaytush Ohlone. We condemn the genocide of these and other tribes across the Western Hemisphere. We honor their legacy and history, and we support rematriation and sovereignty efforts.
This podcast is a proud member of the BFF.fm podcast network. Learn more at podcasts.bff.fm.
BFF.fm, best frequencies forever.